Welcome to the Players Podcast. This is Coach Espinoza, joined today by a returning guest, Salem legend, Coach Mike McShane. Coach, welcome. Thanks for coming back again.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always fun to hang out.
I want to start off by talking about the Ole Cup that just happened, because I think you were a big part of that. And just talk about what the Ole Cup is, what Unified is, and the progress you see coming in that area.
Oh, sure. Really a blessing. I got to just participate in the Ole Cup the last couple of years. Last year it was out at Sprague. This year it was hosted at the newly refurbished PAC Community Center. And the owners of the PAC Community Center donated the facility, which is really exciting and promising for the future. It's a great partnership and collaboration with Unified Sports. Unified Sports is near and dear to my heart. I have a special needs daughter, and it's where we just talked about it earlier, about really opening up access to everyone to sports, pairing our special needs athletes up with their partners, and letting them get out there and compete and have fun and get exercise in a safe environment. It's one of the greatest things I've ever been a part of.
What did the Ole Cup entail? Was it like a tournament? Was it more of a clinic? What was it like?
It started out as a clinic in the morning, and we had an elementary school clinic and a middle school clinic, and that was awesome to see the kids in there working on their skills and practicing the fundamentals and having a lot of fun doing it. And then we got into our games, and that was an elementary school tournament, and then a middle school tournament, and then a high school tournament. And like I said, dude, it was awesome.
That's really cool. My nephew was there representing for Sprague, and he learned what Unified was at that day. He didn't quite know what Unified meant. So kind of go into what Unified means and how it's different from maybe what we saw as the Special Olympics maybe when we were younger.
Yeah, I think the name says it all. We are coming together, and we are pairing our special needs athletes up with their partners. And so in basketball, we would have at all times 2 to 3 athletes on the court and then a couple of partners. And it's a program we run at McNary High School. When I got to McNary 2 years ago, the Unified Sports was already set up there. And since then, we've added Unified Theater. I went to a showing of Alice in Wonderland a couple of days ago, took my class down there to see just a really beautiful performance and some really great talent. And then we also have a Unified business. And so these access to these areas of life, whether it's business or culinary arts or sports or theater, it's really cool, again, with a daughter that's coming up that has special needs, to see that we're really continuing to grow in terms of providing access to everyone, and just blessed to be a part of it.
That's awesome. I think one of my favorite stories from all the years of doing the Hoops Project clinics was one time we had a dad bring his son who was in a wheelchair, and he put the ball in his son's lap and pushed him through every drill.
Yeah.
And he was like, "Hey, can I do this? Is that cool?" I'm like, "Yeah, come on, man. Get out here." Like, because it's sacrifice on the dad's part, but you just know, like, that kid is just having so much fun.
Yeah.
And he may not be able to express it, or, you know, maybe he couldn't, but you just know he's out there having the time. He's patting the ball like he's dribbling.
Yeah.
It was just awesome to see. Yeah. So I'm sure you have plenty of good stories from the Unified stuff, and I'm excited to see what happens with it. I know it's been a big part of the school district as far as the high school level, even elementary level. We're hearing about Unified opportunities that we can produce at our schools.
And it's a nationwide program. I think it is in affiliation with the Special Olympics, but it's something that's growing across the whole country. It's growing in Salem, and it's growing out at McNary High School where I work, and it's just everyone is excited about it. It's like a win-win for everyone. And it also breaks down a lot of stigmas and misconceptions that we have. And so it's this really process of where we really gain a deeper understanding. And I think in doing so without, I think that's promising for humanity. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's the beauty of sports too, is just everybody wants to play. And there will become a level where it's competitive and, you know, anybody gets cut. But at the young levels, it's all about getting out there, enjoying the sport, being a teammate.
Yeah.
And I think that's the great thing about what the Unified is doing. It's allowing, like you said, access to everybody.
Yep.
Like, everybody can come play sports, not just able-bodied people, you know.
And getting, I think, competition sometimes can get out of balance in terms of where we place our importance. But to see these our athletes out there competing and really wanting to win, but in a really pure way.
Yes.
Like you're saying, for the fun of it, is a great reminder for all of us when it comes to competition.
You mentioned you spent 2 years just recently at McNary as the head girls coach,
mm-hmm.
and that brought you back to Oregon. We're all lucky to have you here.
Thanks,
back
dude.
In the great state.
Thank you.
Back in our city.
Thank you.
A
Thank
legend.
You very much.
A legend here.
Thank you.
And we're glad to have you back. I enjoyed watching your teams online. I didn't make it out to a game in person, but I watched online plenty of times. What do you say, you know, you came into this as a head coach, first time head coach, maybe you had expectations, maybe you had some ideas of what you were going to do, and coming in now 2023, 2022, whenever you came in, the game has changed since, you know, maybe the last time you were in Oregon around high school, you know,
yeah.
coaching in high school or playing yeah. in high school. What are some things you came in and you thought, I'm going to have to adjust to this?
Yeah.
Or maybe I can help bring certain things back to what I expected before.
Yeah. I think, well, being a head coach is a tremendous responsibility. And it has a lot of different aspects and facets to it on the court and off the court. I think in terms of on the court stuff, my goal was to really do my best to pass on some of the wisdom and philosophies that I was able to learn from a lot of the great coaches in Oregon, in our town, in the Willamette Valley, that I had really, really grateful to be around those coaches when I was a kid coming up. And so I saw it as an opportunity to maybe pass along some of that stuff. And with my high school coach, Barry Adams, to kind of the best way I could do to like repay or not, I don't know. But
carry the torch a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, yeah, and make sure some of that stuff doesn't get lost.
Yeah.
Which, when you watch the game, it has changed a lot, but the fundamentals are still important.
Mm-hmm.
And he was such a great teacher of the fundamentals. And so to carry that torch. And I think we were able to do that over the last few seasons at McNary. And I think that the girls appreciated it. I think their families appreciated it. I think that our the people that came to watch us play, we were, you know, we didn't win all of our games. We had some that were better than others, but we did our best really to play hard and to put our focus on those fundamentals and playing together. And we continued to get better. And that was a really fun to be a part of.
What was obvious with your team is just how they competed. And I mean, every game, like you said, you didn't win every game, but every game felt like you were in it and you were fighting
Thanks.
For a chance to win. That's
yeah.
when I watched. And sometimes NFHS didn't show the score.
Yeah.
So I'm like, man, they got to be right there. And then,
yeah.
oh, maybe that one got away. Or,
yeah.
oh, they're up by 20, and they're still playing this hard. It's
yeah.
like, no matter what the score was.
Thank you.
And when it comes to style, what went into your decision when you saw your girls and formulating your style of play, defense, offense? What did you look for, and how did you make that decision?
Yeah, we wanted to play fast. We want a fast break because we think that's the funnest way to play, and it's the most fun to watch. And we talked about it as a team, and that's something that we decided we wanted to do together. And again, I come from Coach Adams, you know, it's maybe a little bit of an old school approach. He would say a lot of people say they want to run, but very few are committed to the run.
Mm-hmm.
And what he was really saying was very few are committed to defense and rebounding. Because if you really want to run, it's hard to do it if you're taking it out of the net. So that was something that we really put our focus on was our man-to-man defense and those fundamentals of getting down in the stance, moving your feet, moving on the flight of the ball, communication, talking to each other. And then it's not over till we get the ball. So really working on our rebounding. And that's something that that just takes time. It takes time. It's a mindset as much as it is the fundamentals is committing to that. But we did that and we got better at that and we got faster and it was fun.
Something I don't see a lot of anymore. You talk about running. I know with Coach Adams, you guys had a set transition break.
Mm-hmm.
With Coach Gar and Coach Litchfield, we were right into high-low, our transition offense every time.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't see that as much these days.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what do you think that is for? Is it because giving kids more freedom or trusting their decisions more? Or is it just that kids want more of a push to make a decision type offense?
I don't know. I think that there's so much to do and so much to put in, you know. And we have less time to do it, I
yeah.
think, than those coaches had. And a week is a lot at the beginning of the season. And now I think, looking back, again, in just in two seasons, I think we had less than 2 weeks of full practice before it was.
You get tryouts.
Yeah, you get tryouts.
You get Thanksgiving
and
week, and
yeah.
then games.
And then we're into it. And so we never got our transition put in. We had our numbered fast break, and then we had our half court offense. And it is another layer that adds speed to the offense, flow to the offense. It's something that we scored a lot of our points in our transition offense mm-hmm. in high school. So I believe in it. And I think it's really fun to watch. But I'd say one of the challenges is just the time in terms of putting all that stuff in. And once the season goes, it's hard to find that balance between getting prepared for the next team and continuing to get better at the simple fundamentals and then introducing new things. So you got to kind of find your way.
I feel bad for kids because we used to have tryouts and then two and a half straight weeks of practices, 2.5 hours long, then Thanksgiving week. Yeah. Then games. So you got 3 straight weeks of 2.5 hour practices where now basically you make the teams.
Yeah.
And it's time to go.
Yeah.
So what do you remember about those practices when you were in high school? Because I remember those being the hardest thing in the world.
Oh, I remember Coach Adams was very structured. I remembered that he surrounded himself with really good assistant coaches. There was not a lot of wasted time. I remember that we put a lot of emphasis into defense. So you're talking about the whole first week of that practice, the first couple of days there would be, so we'd have tryouts. And then once the team was set, we'd have what was called National Defense Week. And you were not allowed to start until you earned 2 legs. And the most legs you could earn in a practice was a half. So you could get a quarter, a half, or none. And to get a half, you'd have to be going pretty crazy for 2.5 hours and standing out amongst everyone else that's trying to go crazy to earn their legs. The balls would come out maybe the second or third day of practice, but it was all still defensive drills. Maybe we were, just working shell, but we're still catching the ball, triple threat, all that stuff. But that's what I remembered. And I would remember that we would have some of our best players on the bench past Christmas and into the new year, into league play, because they hadn't earned their legs. If you didn't earn them during National Defensive Week, you could earn them in another practice. But you'd really have to be making some noise.
What was the scale there? Was it all based on coach's kind of opinion, or was it like a rating scale on how to?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was effort and enthusiasm. And so it's just how hard you were working in these drills and how loud you were being. I think we can't put an emphasis enough on communication and teaching young people how to play and talk at the same time. And I think sometimes people might be embarrassed. Mm-hmm. They think that it's not important. Or it just hasn't been practiced enough. But talking while you're playing, if you want to get all 5 people on the same page, which is beautiful basketball to watch, mm-hmm. to get that synchronicity and to get people working together, and it can be nonverbal, but teaching how to play and talk at the same time and communicate is really important. And so at those practices, they were loud. We were loud. We had great leadership too. We had some seniors when I was there. Josh Unruh was there, and the energy that he would bring into the gym every time he walks through the door. But Coach Adams would take us out and talk to us about how important that was.
Mm-hmm.
As captains, he would talk to us about how important that bringing that energy into practice was.
Did he do anything special to help encourage people to talk, or was it more just kind of accountability and you have your leaders kind of getting on people too?
Yeah, I'd say it was both. Okay. And I think that's when it's really effective, is when the leaders on the team are doing it. And he was really good at empowering us and having that set up where the upperclassmen were teaching the younger classmen about how things were done.
Mm-hmm.
When you put that with that jersey on, what that meant. And then they'd model it for us. And then there would be accountability. If it wasn't getting done as a team, we'd run.
Is there any strategies you kind of picked up about how to teach people how to teach kids how to talk on the court?
It's when they get the confidence to do it. And I think the confidence comes from working hard at it. You got to put an emphasis on it. You got to practice it. And then you got to go out and experience the results of it and the success that comes from it. And I saw that happening with our program. The last couple of years, where they would go out and have those games where they played so well together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because their communication on the court, they weren't talking to the other team, they weren't talking to the refs, they were talking to each other. And they were talking from the beginning of the game to the end of the game, and the bench was loud. And all of that communication, it's infectious, it's contagious, and it gives you energy and confidence. It takes the pressure off your shoulders because it's a team game.
I think it's one of the hardest things to teach. Especially when somebody comes in not saying anything, You know, you have some who naturally will talk more, and that's kind of their thing. But when you have a player who's silent and trying to encourage them to call out a screen, to call out a switch, to do something, and, you know, you got to push them out of the comfort zone, but there's a time, too, where they're going to shut down. So finding strategies to do that, I've found to be very hard as a coach.
I agree.
To encourage them to do that.
I agree. And allowing that space for the growth, which isn't going to happen overnight. And letting them know that even when they're not talking, they're still, you know, everything's still good. It's just something we got to work on.
What are some things you've done, you know, particularly in the last 2 years, in terms of accountability? Because, you know, it's a different era. You got more sensitive with young people now than when we were kids. You know, coaches can say whatever they want, and you just kind of had to take it. And, and now I think there's, you know, for the better, you know, some communication things that are more improved now. But accountability can be hard to get across to kids because you're not being mean to them. You're trying to help them learn that you made this choice or you did this thing and now this happens. It's a natural consequence. So what are some things that, you know, you've carried over or maybe you've reflected on and been like, I don't know if that's the right decision when it comes to accountability in a team?
Yeah, I think the key, the biggest key is probably just being consistent. And so having some things set up, whether it's, you know, being on time and keeping it simple. So we had just, you know, being on time. And then when you're there, doing your best to pay attention and give your best effort. And so at practice. And if you did that, then, you know, you're going to make mistakes. We encourage that because that's how we're going to grow. You know, and you're going to have times where you might space out or, you know, the day can be long. Anything can be happening in somebody's life. And but really encouraging. And we had great leadership. We had, I think that that's a real key, is getting your upperclassmen and your some of your best players to buy into, you know, being on the baseline when it's time to practice, and then being at the front of the drills when it's time to show what we're doing, and teaching that, encouraging that, being consistent with that. I think the consistency is probably the most important part, and then not getting emotional when it doesn't happen, but just having some, I won't even call them consequences. It's just kind of cause and effect. I think that's the best way to kind of go with that.
As a player, you were very dedicated, very driven, had a strict regimen. I remember you telling me about it. Very impressive. Not everybody could follow that. And so just curious now, seeing players in this era, and they're putting in a lot of work.
Yeah.
They're going to trainers, going to camps, going to clinics, you know, going to places to do that. Where do you see that kind of the correlation between the old school method and now where, you know, we might have had some help, maybe a trainer, you know, maybe a coach come help us, but a lot of the things we were doing was on our own.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So where do you see the correlation now as far as kids are going to trainers? More often than not, every kid has somebody they go to to work with.
Yeah.
And they're putting a lot of time into the game. And sometimes I'm not overly sure that they are putting the time into the right things.
Yeah.
So, I mean, where do you see player development or anything in that aspect of the game right now?
I think the game is it's a team game, but players are made in the off season. And so how are you going to get better? And I think the closer you can get to just the fundamentals, and the fundamentals are, you know, I think I went down to the Salem Library and checked out Pistol Pete's tapes, and it was the same drills that he was doing, you know, probably 40 or 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I think that those drills are still valuable. I think that playing with your team, getting to know, I think some of the value of that gets lost, where if things aren't working out for you here, you're going to go over here. If things aren't working out for you here, you're going to go over here. Mm-hmm. I think sticking with your team and learning how to play together. My family moved around a lot, but I was really blessed when I got to Salem. I teamed up with a buddy and we played together. And after 2 or 3 or 4 years, that really paid off on the court. And so finding those buddies that you have in your neighborhood that love the game. And I think playing a lot of 2-on-2, a lot of 3-on-3, competing, learning how to really compete, you know, I think all those are really valuable. I think the individual fundamentals are really valuable. And where you learn those from, I think there's a lot of different ways to do things. But it's one of those things where you got to put in the work. Mm-hmm. And I think in the game of basketball, you look at it, shooting, ball handling, dribbling, passing. And so, you know, for me, I didn't have a hoop at home, but I had a ball and I would dribble it freaking everywhere. And then I just set a goal for myself. I'm going to be the best ball handler at South Salem my freshman year. And I spent probably about an hour a day working on my ball handling. And I was confident, that gave me confidence when I walked through there. I wasn't the fastest. I wasn't the biggest. I wasn't the strongest. I couldn't shoot the best with the best score, but I felt like I could take care of the ball the best. And so I think that for young people that really love the game, finding out what they kind of do and what they enjoy to do, whether it's defense, whether it's rebounding, whether it's, you know, being able to set the offense and facilitate, finding their role. Not everybody can be the best player on the team. Mm-hmm. And I think I think sometimes the focus can get a little bit too on the individual stuff. And so I think that we talked about having fun. And I think the way that you're going to have the most fun, where's your motivation coming from? And I think a lot of times when we're spending maybe money working out with private trainers and a lot of this stuff, I'm not so sure the motivation is coming from within the kid that wants to get better at basketball. I think sometimes that motivation can be coming from around the kid and then the obligation to provide these opportunities. But I think the most powerful thing is when we can tap into that intrinsic motivation, mm-hmm. which is how do we get the player, not how do we get them to, but finding out, how much do you love this? And if you love this, then these are the things that you can practice like a guitar player. Or like anyone else, these are the fundamentals of your craft that you can practice because there's levels to it. Mm-hmm. And if you want to like keep moving up levels as a guitar player or as a dribbler of a basketball, then you got to have that guitar in your hands and you got to have that ball in your hands and you got to be working at it. And if other people can show you a riff or if a good guitar coach can come over and show you a trick or show you, but that isn't what's going to do it. It's going to be the hours that you put in on that guitar or mm-hmm. with that basketball. And the only reason you should be doing that is if you freaking love it. Mm-hmm. You have to actually really love it. And I think that sometimes, I don't know. And that's the key, I think, component is the love for it. And if you have that, then the motivation is going to come from there. And then it's almost like nothing can get in my way of nothing's going to stop me mm-hmm. from doing this. And that's, I mean, when I was young, that's how I felt. Mm-hmm. And then my parents, even with limited resources, still tried to get me in front of really good coaches that could show me those things that they couldn't. There's value in that. A lot of value Definitely. In that, but not without the work. And if you're doing the work, someone else wants you to do the work, but you don't really love it, it's going to burn out.
In your short time, are you seeing kids who are like on their own? Like, I just want to get in the gym. Like, can you just open it for me? Cause I just want to get in there.
Yeah. And I think I don't know. It's only my second year and people say we are coming off COVID, which kind of put it, it was like a disruption in the rhythm and the pattern. Mm-hmm. And so we're getting back into rhythm, I think with that. I'm seeing it more and more. And it's something that we really encouraged. And again, the more and more our players get in before practice and get in after practice, even if it's 5 minutes, even if it's 10, 15 minutes, and they're doing their mic and drills and they're working on their spots from where they're going to score mm-hmm. on in the offense, and we play better.
Yeah.
We just play better. And so I think that it's happening more and more. And I think that's what it takes if you really want to be a championship player or a championship mm-hmm. team.
Jason Williams, the White Chocolate point guard, he talks a lot about how his time in the gym alone helped his creativity because he would imagine situations on where the trap would come from, how the man's guarding me. And, you know, nowadays it's so much coach-driven where I don't know if players even think like, oh, I can go to a gym by myself. Like, I don't need to have a coach or a trainer with me.
I could break into any gym when I was in high school and college. I could go up to any gym and find the door that had the little bit of wiggle on it and pull it, and pop it. And usually being now, not as many alarms and no cameras.
Yeah.
Today's is a completely different world that uh-huh. these kids are growing up in. But I do believe there are coaches out there that will come down and open up the gym. All you got to do is give them a call. But that time alone in the gym, mm-hmm. Not that creativity that comes from it, but there is, my uncle told me, it's going to take thousands of lonely hours honing your skills in the gym. And those hours pay off because they give you confidence.
Yeah. I just hope some kids hear that because I think there's a perception now where it's like, why am I going to go to the gym by myself? I need someone to show me how to do these drills. Yeah. And this type of thing. But yeah, like you, I would just be outside shooting for like 3 hours a night and just like imagine myself coming off this screen and like clock's coming down. I got to hit this shot type of thing.
And then when you got in games, those are the memories that those serve you.
Yeah.
Those experiences serve you. I mean, I think I got.
It took me a little longer to get in games than it took you. I had to spend a few years on the bench.
No. Man, I spent my fair time on the bench, plenty of benches too, and that was my role at that time. And you cheer as loud as you can for your teammates, and that's part of the game. That's part of the game. I do remember getting those Pistol Pete tapes. If the kids out there are listening, I think it was the summer before my seventh grade year. My dad went down to the library. We rented them. We took them home. We got a pen and paper out. We watched them, and we wrote down every drill. And then we went to the gym and we took the tapes back. I think they might have been a little late. We got them back. And then we got to the gym and we replicated those drills. And we created a workout regimen. And I did that. And it was simple. It was sitting on the ground. It was wrist breakers. It was a lot of stationary stuff. It was about a 45-minute stationary and then maybe about 15 minutes of passing and moving up and down the court. Passing against the wall. Put a spot on the wall with both hands. I mean, just passing against the wall and hitting that spot, behind the back passes with both hands. And that routine would take me about an hour. And when I really got good at it, I could get it done in half an hour to 45 minutes. I did that routine all the way through college. So I did it for 8 years. And it was very simple, but, without a doubt, it allowed me, to become one of the best ball handlers in the state of Oregon. And that's, made the game so much more fun to play. And those skills opened up a lot of options on the court and then provided me a lot of opportunities with friends to travel and all kinds of stuff, experiences that I got to have, ultimately all over the world, Australia, China, best friends in the world, eating some of the, you know, culture, all this stuff. And if I had to trace them back to one thing, I'd say it was those ball handling drills. Winning a state championship with some great teammates, playing for a great coach, getting to play at South Salem, making the varsity team at South Salem was such an accomplishment, was such an honor. Getting to go play college basketball and getting a scholarship to go do that. All my friends that I met along the way, yourself included, if I had to trace it all back, it would be to those ball handling drills. And I was very lucky to have a dad that held me accountable. He would ask me every day. A lot of times he was there to watch and make sure that I got my reps, but it was those reps. And so if those kids are still out there listening, it's the reps, getting in the gym all by yourself and getting those reps, that's what sets you apart.
Well, the work paid off for you. You became, you know, one of the best point guards in the state. You went on to play University of Oregon. And I've seen a few of your games on YouTube, and you guys were playing like power triangle offense.
Mm-hmm.
And you were the point guard, mm-hmm. one of the best guards in the state. And if you fast forward to today, if you have the best point guard in the state, you're not running the power triangle offense.
Yeah.
You're running pick and roll or ISO.
Yeah.
When you think about then and now, and you imagine yourself playing today,
yeah.
what do you see yourself doing in the high school? Like, because you had the ability to do all that stuff.
Yeah.
But you were playing power triangle and you were feeding that ball down low to Thalo.
Yeah.
And... You guys won a state title. You can't fault Coach Adams.
No.
You guys won a state title.
He won over 80% of his games, I think, as a coach over his career.
But just imagine yourself, your skill set, playing today.
Yeah, I think that I'd be on that same team, and we'd still win 80% of our games, and we'd be doing okay. I think that it works.
Mm-hmm.
Coach Adams would say, it doesn't matter what you do, it's how you do it. And what he did is he had us do it over and over and over and over and over again, and we got pretty good at it. He taught me how to receive an outlet really deep. So every time I'd receive an outlet, it would be deeper than the free throw line, on the move, hopefully at a full sprint. We were gone. I think we averaged 79 points a game my junior year with 32-point games. And we had good competition in our league. And there were some teams without a shot clock that were trying to slow us down. I think that the style has changed. I think, you know, the offenses have changed. But I think that even looking at the game now, I think that the pendulum swings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you look at the game now and the big man's coming back.
Mm-hmm.
You better get a big man. The 60% two-pointer is still valuable. And you have to have the personnel to do it. But running, and it doesn't, you can't run unless all five people run.
Yeah.
And getting wings that can run, getting a post that can run, shooting the ball over the front of the rim. I think that those are all still valuable things. And it is interesting to see the game change. I love seeing the skills of the shooters and big people that can step outside and getting to see the freedom of all of that. But I also love seeing the fundamental physical game around the basket. And I think that we're going to continue to find our way and find a balance with that. Mm-hmm. I think that it's not completely lost. I think that it's coming back into style, mm-hmm. which is some of those power basketball and finding our balance with that. It's a physical game.
Yeah.
I like to see that. I like mm-hmm. to see, I mean, the playoff basketball. You saw Tyrese Maxey
yeah, yeah.
came down with that rebound. He got hit so hard. He's trying to call a timeout. They lose the ball. It bounces over to DiVincenzo. He knocks down the game winner. And afterwards, they interview Maxey, and he said, I should have hugged the ball hard. The NBA came out with a report the next morning and said, we messed up. The refs missed the timeout and the foul. And Maxey said, it doesn't matter. I should have held on to the ball harder and hugged it in. That's what I'm talking about, man. That's the kind of basketball
that Coach Adams taught. That's the accountability that you want your players to have.
Yeah.
Like maybe deep down, he's thinking, I got fouled, but when it comes down to it, I should have held the ball.
Yep.
I should have squeezed that thing.
And this is a possession game, and mm-hmm. that one possession, I could have held on to it. So we learn, and we get better. But I don't mind seeing the different styles. You know, I think Steph Curry, I get to remember seeing him at Davidson, and he's completely revolutionized the game.
Yeah.
And it's fun to watch. Luka Doncic come over, and with his skill set and his size, he reminds me of a throwback player. You could throw that dude back into the mm-hmm. 90s with the physical style, and he would have fit right in. So it's fun watching. The best of the world are still a lot of fun to watch. And I think with the local high school stuff, I think that there is some – I hope to see it at that level too, which is to see a little bit more stuff around the basket. Because I think it's valuable.
There's a lot of kids shooting deep threes,
yeah.
and not all of them should be.
Yeah.
You know, and some of them can and keep doing it.
You know, AJ LePre.
Yeah.
AJ LePre texted me a couple days ago. He said, pound dribbles and layups. And until you master those, just finishing with either hand around the basket, reverse hands with both sides, until you can make your layups and really learn how to dribble the ball, what else are we working on? And so I think that there, you know, I think, and that's coming from a guy that can really shoot mm-hmm. it. I think that there's a lot of value, like I said, and I'll continue to say, and that's just in the fundamentals, finishing around the basket, either hand, ball handling, all that stuff.
I know you're big on Mike and drills. I'm big on Mike and drills too. Do you find a reluctance with young players and wanting to work on layups? Because it's like, you get them out to the three-point line, it's like, I'm ready, boom, boom.
Yeah.
But okay, we're going to work on the layups and power-ups. Yeah. It's like,
lost art.
Really? Really?
Yeah. It's a lost art. And that's another thing I used to do when I was in the gym by myself all the time is I would be so bored, I would have my right hand compete against my left hand. And we'd go forward Mikens, and I'd go 100 on each side, and I would be rooting for my left hand. So when my right hand missed, I'd be like, this is your chance. And, you know, at the end of it, my right hand's making, you know, as a seventh or eighth grader, you know, 80, 90 out of 100. Up into the 90s, as the left hand starts making 60, 70, 80, and it's getting better and better, oh, all of a sudden, now I'm confident. I catch the ball in a game underneath the basket without even thinking about it. I can go up with my weak hand and make a layup, and that stuff doesn't happen magically. You know, it's from getting those reps in, and there is, I think, some resistance, but that's our job.
Yeah.
That's mm-hmm. our job, is to break that resistance down and, again, show them the value of it and get those reps in.
What are the easiest things to get kids to do right now? I've been out of the game 5 years, so I'm like, even 5 years ago is different than now.
I don't know, and I don't. I think the hardest thing to do was getting them to talk.
Yeah,
I would agree. On the court, mm-hmm. getting them to talk to each other. I think the easiest thing for them to do was just to see how good of friends and how good of teammates they were, and how much respect they had for each other. We had so many good kids that came from good families that, like, it's bigger than basketball at that point. You know, we can sit here and talk about getting a Division I scholarship or, mm-hmm. you know, all this. And we all have our dreams and our goals, but the real gold that comes from the game are the relationships. Mm-hmm. And so that was not hard. that was easy. That's been easy the last few years. We got some really great people, and to see the way that they treat each other on and off the court, that was a real positive.
That's really cool. I didn't understand that till I got a little older. Just because you're in the game, you're kind of in the game.
Yeah.
Then you get older, you say, wait a minute, everybody I know is through basketball. Yeah. My wife is like, how do you know so-and-so? I'm like, what do you think? I was like, what do I do? It's basketball.
Yeah.
Like, of course, that's how I know them.
Yeah.
You know, like if they didn't do basketball, what would I talk about with them?
Yeah. And I'm sure it would have been something else, but it's basketball, man. Yeah. And basketball, I'm right there with you. I think if I look at all my best friends in the world, they've all come through the game.
When I ran into you a few times, but we did the week at Camp Cascade.
Yeah.
That's when I really heard your story and heard you talk, and I was like, man, I need to be around this guy some more, because it just feeds off, to be hearing you talk and how you hold kids accountable, but also respect them and encourage them at the same time.
Yeah.
And I think it's helped me as a PE teacher, now that I'm not coaching anymore, being hard on kids, but also like they know I want the best for them, and they know that I love them and want to see them succeed. Yeah. And when you were speaking at that camp, I could just like feel that from what you were saying. Like, he might look like a mean, tough guy.
Yeah.
But every one of these kids knows he wants to help them right now.
Yeah.
Where did that come from? How did you develop that? Is it just you?
No, I think that my family, my grandparents and my parents and my brother and sisters, we care about each other a lot. And even when times get tough, we can go through tough times together. We're going to it's because we care about each other. We can get through those times. And I think that came across in the way that, you know, with my teammates as well, with like Thalo, we recognize that in each other, how much we cared about competing and about winning and about Coach Adams and our teammates. And so I'm really blessed to be able to share that with young people. You know, everyone has their purpose, and I was able to find mine through teaching and coaching. And being able to just share that heart with people, and it can, the intensity, we all have different styles of doing it. I recognize your style, which is much more calm, and you have a lot of humility. Like you said, once I saw you playing and the way you played and moved, I wanted to spend more time around you. You inspire me, even though you're a little younger. The Salem Hoops Project and what you do, nonprofit, I think that your motives, like your reasons for doing what you do, even though we might have different styles, I think we recognize that we're doing it because we really want to make an impact in young people's lives, and that's what fills up our cup. And so when you see that in other people, and you just want to be around it, and it's just a blessing, dude. It's really a blessing to be able to go out there and share that. And we have good days and bad days, just like the kids. And to help them, one of the things I would say, you know, we would say, I talked about this with my teammate Andy Sideout today on our way up to see Coach Adams. He said, you know, that Coach Martin, kids have changed, kids have changed, kids have changed, kids haven't changed, you know, in terms of, you know, we've probably been saying since the beginning of the time, oh, the entitlement, or, you know, they're not working hard enough, or they're not respectful of their elders. I think that's entitlement. I think just because I'm an old dude with gray beard and a badge that say I work here, then now I expect you to respect me. I think that's a sense of entitlement. So I think that young people deserve everything that we're asking from them, and to be given the opportunity. Before we label them or before we put them in the box, let's get to know them. Let's find out what they're going through. Let's find out what some of their challenges are. Let's show them that we care about them. And then I find that when you do that, they're going to meet you in the middle, and then they're going to want to please you. They're going to want to like perform. And there could be days where I could be off. There could be days where they could be off. We can communicate about that. We can admit our mistakes. We have the courage to do that around each other. And so, like I said, some days are better than others, but it's in that relationship where I think there's a lot of room for growth. And that's always been kind of a strength of mine. And so thank you for recognizing that up at camp. I missed that place, man.
Oh man, what a shame.
Yeah. So every summer we'd have, you know, over 1,000 kids, no cell phones, in the woods, working on their game, and if you yelled at them, their parents were—they weren't within thousands, you know, hundreds of miles. No, but we had a lot of fun up there. Defense was loud, and I miss that place a lot. I miss that place a lot.
I was faithful to the Willamette camp because they gave me my start as a camp counselor.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I always snuck it out there, but my week out there with you guys and just seeing the kids having to talk to each other because the cell phones, you know, there's no service up there.
Yeah.
And it was really a special time, just that alone, just reminded time, like, no, you got to talk to each other. And, you know,
and
like
be up on the river,
the sunlight, the sunrise is your alarm. Yeah. You know, when that light comes in the window, you better wake up.
Connecting with nature. Yeah. That if I would tell kids, if you like basketball and you like nature, then you found paradise. But pro classic, Gordy James. I mean, both Barry Adams and Gordy James, a couple of local coaching legends that taught thousands of kids at their camps, dude. I got a few times got to go to Pro Classic, and Gordy was always so good to me and my family over at Willamette. And, you know, what a blessing it was to get to learn from both those guys in the city of Salem during that time.
Are camps kind of not necessarily extinct, but are they kind of going, because, you know, the trainings, AAU programs, you know, like finding these type of cohorts that you go into.
Yeah.
So are these overnight camps, like, have we seen the end of them, or are we seeing...
We still got your team camps, which is a little different, little different experience. I think we are, you know, there's a lot of liability doing overnight stuff. It's a little different than it was, you know, even 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Finding the right facility. But, man, what, I could tell you in 1 week, you could have some transformation in terms of, you'd see the growth in kids and getting away from their comfort zone. And as much as it was on the court at that age, that coming of age, it was off the court as well. And you could see some, it's a hard week to get through it, and you see the struggle, and then you see the feeling that they get at the end, that sense of accomplishment when they finish what they started. And, I miss it. It was a great camp. We get those kids working hard.
Yeah.
Like you said, kids want to be pushed. Mm-hmm. They really do, and they want to be pushed consistently. And so that was a place where we got to do that.
When you're a kid, you don't think, like, accomplishment. I just went to camp. Like, it was fun. Yeah, you know, but when I was working that, especially as I got into my 30s, I'm like, man, I used to go through all these drills and play three games a day and, like, and then try to play at lunchtime. Yeah. And then, you know, like, and then the coaches would make us do push-ups and planks and run these hills because, you know, people were goofing off. And it's like, I used to, like, be able to do this.
I wish I know. I mean, I was just saying it today. My back, I don't even think I can get up and down anymore.
If you had to, you could.
Yeah.
If I called you to the right
game.
I
wouldn't be able to walk for a couple of weeks, but yeah. You call me, I'll be there.
I did play at a tournament not too long ago. I had to play two games in one day.
Yeah.
And for about a week, my knee was pretty inflamed.
Yeah.
But it was worth it, man. It was fun.
Yeah. Yeah, man, so many great coaches coming up. And so I see that now, and I see it again. I think there's still a lot of great coaches out there, and that's exciting to see.
We're about to see some big turnover in Salem. We got your job. We got three boys' jobs that are going to be switching over.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens there.
Yeah, and with the school district, with the May 17th, the reduction in force. Yeah. So that'll be interesting.
Just hypothetical, because some coaches might be in this situation.
Yeah.
Let's say, you know, you stayed on. And then the district said, we don't have a teaching job for you.
Yeah.
I mean, what would your decision have been like then if you were still planning on coaching, but we don't have a teaching job
for you? Yeah, my profession is teaching, and I love it. I really love teaching health and wellness out at McNary, and my 9 years prior to that teaching PE out in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I've fallen in love with the profession. I'm going to be happy doing it until I retire. And coaching is a way for me, you know, a way for me to establish myself in a community, establish myself in a school. My real passion is teaching. And so I'll find out a lot more on May 17th. If I am in the building at McNary, which is where I want to be, then I'm going to coach however I can, however I can help out. I want to continue to help build their basketball community and those, a lot of the girls that I coached. I want to continue to help them if they want to work on their games individually. And Coach Kirch and I are very good friends. He helped me get the job, and I want to help him. And you know, that he's got some really good players coming back next year. I've been working with a few of them, and that's really exciting. But we don't know until May 17th.
Yep.
And if May 17th, if I don't have a job at McNary, or if I don't have a job in the school district anymore, then that opens it up. But like I said to you earlier, I am an able body. I can go out and work. And
you're versatile.
Yeah, I'm versatile.
You but find something.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I'm not going to worry. You know, it's nice having faith and being able to turn things over. And this is one of those things that you just have to kind of turn over and surrender and pray about it and trust that things are going to work out for the best. And sometimes when things aren't going your way, it's hard to see that.
Yeah.
But in my experience, even when things don't go my way, usually there's something bigger going on. So
definitely.
I'm gonna roll with that.
That's right. You have to.
Yeah. Yep.
A little history now. I had Coach Litchfield on. He refused to give me a starting five, all time Salem starting five.
Okay.
I want you to be up for the challenge if you're willing.
Okay.
All time
Salem starting five. I mean, I don't know how far back I can go.
Let's just go even.
But I'll go. I'll give you my top five.
You could even go just from when you were around and you saw players.
We're going NBA.
No.
Dennis Rodman.
Salem, local okay. legends.
Okay. I got to go with my man at the big, you know, Thalo's getting yep. the first spot. Player of the year. I think he broke the tournament scoring record that year. And there were a lot of good players in the tournament that year. A lot of Division I. Guys that went to Utah, guys that went to Oregon, guys that went to Oregon State, guys that went to Portland State. We had a good class that year. So he's going in. He's in there. Point guard. I'm going with Damon Stoudemire. I didn't see Terrell playing.
Salem.
Oh, Salem. Okay, okay. Salem okay. only. Okay, okay, okay.
Well, yeah, Damon okay. Stoudemire would okay. probably be Oregon.
Yeah, and that's right, Thalo. I'm still keeping you on the Oregon all-time
that's
Oregon.
That's impressive, man. Thalo ought to be proud about that.
He's right over Kevin Love. Oh, no. Okay, okay, okay. I mean, I'm probably going to have to stay pretty heavy as Saxon on this
you
one.
You do what you got
to
do.
So, point guard, I'm going with Jeremiah Dominguez. We talked about it earlier. Mm-hmm. State champion, player of the year in the state of Oregon. I think two-time, what's that conference?
Big Sky.
Big Sky yep. player of the year, and led his team, Portland State. I think probably the last time they've ever made the tournament.
It has to be.
Were the 2 years he led yeah. them to the tournament. I mean, he got to play against Mario Chalmers and Kansas. And, man, they competed. So yeah. he's going into my point guard. Scoring point guard. The guy. So we already got points because Thalo is going to give you 20.
Jeremiah passed, though.
Yeah, he'll pass
some assists out there.
He can. Heck yeah. But he can also score.
Yo, definitely.
I mean, I don't know what he averaged. It must have been right up around 20.
Yeah, it's high 20s.
Yeah, high 20s.
We diamond to one him and he had 29.
So I don't know how many players of the year there have been in Salem, but at the shooting guard, I'm going to go with the next player of the year, which was also Saxon, Josh Unruh.
State player of the year?
State player of the year.
Crazy.
State player of the year.
I never knew that.
Josh Unruh. State player of the year, Thalo Green. State player of the year, Jeremiah Dominguez. Okay, I got
it. Thalo was state player of the year
yeah,
too?
Yeah, Thalo was state player of the year.
Wow.
State player of the year, unanimous first team all tournament. Let's see. And my other wing, opposite Josh Unruh, it's gonna be hard. The three that pop into my head real quick would be Brian Hills. Yep, shot it, yep. man. I mean, he could shoot it.
Right?
He went to McKay, played for his dad, and then I think he was at Western Baptist yep, and maybe broke yep. every record. He could shoot it.
Yeah.
Adam Maston, who point guard, we're gonna scoot him over because he had the size. I think he was right at 6'4", lefty.
Yep.
Went down to Oregon State and averaged like 12 or 13 points a game in an extreme, when the Pac-10 was the best basketball yeah. conference in the country. He could, unorthodox lefty, great shooter, great ball handler, great vision. And then the other guard was the one we were talking about, probably Flicker, Casey Flicker. At the other guard was prolific over there at McNary. I'm going to go with Maston. So I got Maston, Unruh, Dominguez, Thalo.
And Hills. Hills?
Dude,
Hills?
Well, I got to get another big. I'm playing. Okay. We're playing the power triangle.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I got to get another big. We're big and we're strong and we're fast. I'm going to go with a legend that scored 48 points as a sophomore at Sprague that could run the middle of the court. So I'm going to have Thalo inbound and trail, and I'm going to have this dude running the court. He didn't get to play his senior year. He got into some trouble, had to leave. But growing up in Oregon, I heard about him. And then when I got to Salem, I got to see him just briefly before he left. He shattered a backboard in the downstairs gym at Willamette, I think the 1 year he played there. he was only 6 foot three, 6 foot four, but he would run down the middle of the court. He had dual wristbands and a headband. And when he dunked, he could pull himself up and slap the backboard on both sides. Alan Fish.
I heard the name a lot.
Alan Fish would be my other. He was like Karl Malone before Karl Malone. Coach taught kids how to post up, and this guy could use his wide, strong body. His shoulders were so wide, and he would post up, and it was like, I remember watching West Albany the year they went to the state championship with Vetter and lost to Stoudemire. They averaged like 97 a game, dude, or 93. I mean, insane how many points they averaged. Their average possession was like seven or eight seconds of possession. That game was 120 to like 118. It went to overtime, but the final score was like 120 to. It's a high school game, man. And Alan Fish just running down the court and dunking, get point guard, deep outlet, just over, no dribble, just catch over the top, catch over the top, catch over the top. And then Vetter's pulling up from steps over half court with West Albany. It was one of the most, as an eighth grader, I mean, that's the stuff you just fall in love with, dude.
Yeah.
And Alan Fish was an idol, a man amongst the boys. So yeah, he's my fifth.
It's a solid squad right there.
Four Saxons.
That's four Saxons.
And Adam Maston. Adam would be happy.
Well, you could take out Maston and put a Saxon in there. There's got to be another one. Yeah, oh, yeah. There's got to be another one you can squeeze in there.
Michael Kubler.
There you go. There you go.
He can shoot it.
Yeah, now you kick out to
man,
him.
Man, A.J. LaPre, dude, that guy, he was a walking bucket, 6'5", walking, took a full-ride scholarship down to Oregon, got hurt, went to Pepperdine, finished out at Rice. But he could play at a high level.
Yeah.
A very high level.
And then Avery.
Yeah, oh yeah, Avery Holmes, man. He's, I mean, it's him or Maya at the point guard.
Yeah.
But Avery was very, very good, man. I mean, he went to Clemson. He's still playing down, I think, in Mexico and like winning leagues and MVP of games. And Avery Holmes is definitely one of the best players to ever come out of Salem. No doubt.
I'm going to have to research the state player though, because I think Jeremiah was the last one from Salem.
Yeah, maybe.
And I'm trying to think who else has been. Because if you got three Saxons.
There were some Saxons that played, and I wish I had as much history of all the schools. You know, I know Taj, who played at North way back in the day. You'd hear about him. He was a legend. But there was a Saxon that went to UCLA on a full-ride scholarship and Stanford on the Meinerts, Stu and Scott Meinert. And then Fish had an older brother, John Fish, that went to BYU on a full-ride scholarship. So with Coach Adams there, you know, during his time, it's just some good basketball and some good players. I mean, West Albany's team, that was Vetter. Vetter was so good. Oregon State on a full ride. North Salem, McNary. McNary, with me, it was Gar. Bolander was really good during those years.
And the Kittner was basketball.
Kittner right was behind good. You? Yeah, he played. He was a sophomore and contributed. We were talking about that game. They beat us our last game at home. Both him and Atwood, both Luke Atwood and Sean Kittner, were sophomores on that team, and they both were contributors and ballers. They were champs. Football, state champs.
Yep.
Those guys were
good. I was at that game.
Yeah.
Good game.
Yeah.
You mentioned Damon Stoudemire, somebody you watched. Who were some guys that you watched when you were coming up and being like, gosh, I got to be that good?
I remember seeing Orlando Williams coming into the Oregon City gym and putting up like 48. And Benson came in. I was just like, he had the high top fade. As a peer, somebody I really looked up to was Tyrone Manlove. And then when I got, you know, I was a late bloomer. And so when he was in eighth grade, he was the number one eighth grader in the nation. Wow. When I was in eighth grade, you know, I wasn't. And I was just real little. And so I continued to grow. And by my senior year, I got to play with those guys, you know. And it was almost like I was playing with my idol, but he was my own age.
Yeah.
You know, Tyrone Manlove was a legend. Damon, though, I got to see him. Denmark Reed was like one of those shooters. He went to Jefferson and he had a state tournament one year where he was hitting shots from all over the court, dude. But Damon was a guy that was on another level. When we say there are levels to this, his ball handling, his shooting, his work ethic, his speed and athleticism. I think, what was he? Maybe the seventh pick in the draft, or he was
rookie
of the year.
It's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, he was signed an $80 million contract. But watching him play as a kid, I'd never seen anyone pass like that. His passing was just like, he saw things, and then the speed that he put on the ball and angles. And, you know, so when you'd see that, you just want to be like that. And there were a few times where he came out to Oregon City and came in the gym, and I saw him work out. And he was just going up and down the court full speed all by himself with those glasses underneath his eyes.
Cut out the vision.
So he couldn't, so it cuts off the peripheral, which, I mean, that's such a simple concept, but how many kids understand? My dad would make me look up at the ceiling when I dribbled. But it would force my butt to go down, so I'd stay in a lower stance. It's almost like doing a squat.
Yeah.
And it, I'd stay lower, but then I couldn't see the ball even with my peripheral vision. And so that forces you to develop your touch and the sound of the ball. And it's those little simple things that, man, can make a difference. And to see a guy that was that good at that moment, I think he had just signed at Arizona a full-ride scholarship, and it was like, he's going to go play for Lute Olson. But he was in the gym, and he was just dripping in sweat, going full speed ball handling drills with those glasses on, and no one else was in there. And I was like, yeah, that's who I want to be like, and that's what he's doing. And then Howard was like, you know when you needed to start doing that? And I was like, today? He's like, yesterday. And he was trying to get that sense of urgency, man.
Yeah.
It's that old t-shirt. Somewhere someone is working right now.
Yeah.
And when you meet them, they're going to get you. So, you know, that's where that motivation, that intrinsic motivation has got to come from.
When I was younger, his cousin was coming up, Salim Stoudemire.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember going to the state tourney and just watching him shoot in warm-ups.
Yeah.
And I was like, I got to be able to shoot that good. Like,
yeah.
I got to be able to
He was another lefty, wasn't he?
Lefty, yeah.
Yeah. I played against him one time in a pickup game, and I thought I was a strong point guard. And that guy made me, he treated me like a little doll. Salim. Salim was very good.
Yeah.
He's younger than me. You know, he's a few years younger. I think he had, when he went to Arizona, he put up 30 against Kansas in Allen Fieldhouse. Uh-huh. That's a legend.
He had a remarkable senior year.
Yeah.
And I would tune into every game I could just to watch how is he getting set for these shots. Because he was like 6'1", 6'2", and he was getting every shot off.
Yeah, he shot that high release, and then he was very strong.
I was a little taller but much slower. So I'm like, how is he getting his shot off? Because, and I was watching his feet. Like, how is he getting, because his feet are getting set every time. He's not fading away.
Yeah.
And so a lot of things that I picked up later in my years was just watching him in games and seeing how he did that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we were really lucky growing up in Oregon with so many great coaches and really some really good players. It's just good basketball. We may not have the athletes that maybe come out of some of the bigger areas, you know, Los Angeles or Chicago, or but when we go on our teams and compete against those teams, we could compete with them a lot of times, and that was fun. So much fun.
Last question.
Yeah.
Most memorable game that you played in, whether it's high school, college, whatever, whether it was a pickup game you played at.
Oh, man.
The downstairs gym at Willamette, whatever it was.
Can I have, plays that stand out? And I tell this to the girls. One of my most memorable plays ever was as a sophomore at the state tournament. We were playing, I think, Lake Ridge. We were maybe up one or down one. It was, within a minute to go. I'm a sophomore on the bench. I really don't. I'm a backup point guard, and our starting point guard is Zach Douglas, and he was, you know, coach. I'd get minimal minutes, and coach would come off and say, "Hey, you're playing great. You know, wish we could keep you out there, but Zach's our guy, man." And that's just the way it was. It was good, and Zach, it was really great to learn from him. He had learned from his older brother Joe Douglas, and really great Saxon point guards, but he fouled out, so coach comes down the bench. He didn't foul out. Our shooting guard fouled out. So our two guard fouls out, and coach comes down the bench to put in somebody. And I'm not our two guard. I'm a backup point guard. And he put me into the two guard to run a play because I needed to set a screen. It was a play where I would set a screen and then come. It was called pair. Not the fruit, but a pair of screens. Coach Adams would always call the plays exactly what they were. So here comes pair. We're going to set two screens, a pair of screens. And my screen was from the wing to the opposite block to bust open the post. The point guard brought it my way. And as soon as he brings it my way from the wing, I'm busting to the opposite block to set a screen on our post. And then I got to come off. The other post had gone high, so now he's setting me a down screen to come off for the jump shot. And I didn't want to shoot that jump shot. And so I knew. I knew the play, even though it wasn't my position, which, you know, we tell kids, you should know how to run the offense from any position. Yeah. And I did. And so coach needed somebody to go set a screen. And I got in there and I set a screen. And I got our post wide open at a state tournament game as a sophomore, playing out of position. And I didn't have to come off the second screen for the jump shot. Thank you, Lord. And it was a game-winning layup. And it made the coach look great, made the guy that laid it up look great. And all I did was set a screen. And I think in that moment, I gained a lot of confidence from my coach. I gained a lot of confidence in myself. And it was just a screen. And I'll always remember that play in terms of, like, you have these moments where you can break, you know, have a almost a breakthrough mentally. Or I remember it was a fall league game out at Chemeketa. And I just remember some things, and it was like the summer before my junior year, so it would have been shortly after that, where things just started to click for me in terms of, like, how to run the fast break and how to run the offense and how to receive the ball. And then the work that I was doing in the weight room started paying off, and then the separation that I was able to get from other players. And I remember, like, so it was in those moments that I was like, the hard work is paying off. I'm gaining the confidence of my coach. My teammates now believe in me. And it was in those moments where then I really started to believe in myself and had really that really self, I guess, it was like a reward. And so it's hard to put it on any one game.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, no, Wilson. When we finally beat Wilson, dude. That's the one. It was not the state championship. I think it was the quarterfinal.
Okay.
And they'd beaten us the year before with Tyrone Manlove and David Jackson and Michael Marion and Jermaine Thompson. They were the number one or number two team seed in the state. Like I said, they beat us the year before and knocked us out. And so we finally got over the hump. We beat them in the last minute or two. Some plays were made. Draw charge, get a steal, run our most basic play. Thalo does his magic. Game over. And our crowd, I remember the South State, you know, at the state tournament.
Yeah.
Just rushing the court.
Talk about that, because that was, well, were you at the Rose Garden or was that the Memorial Coliseum?
That was at the Memorial Coliseum. Okay. But then we played our
the state championship game. Yeah.
Was the first.
I remember watching that on
maybe
TV.
Maybe the first championship, or some of the first games ever played in the Rose Garden.
Yeah.
They had just completed construction of it. But before that, everything was in the Glass Palace.
But talk about that, because that's something people don't understand, like how big the state tournament was.
Oh, man, it was 16 teams. So it was spring break part two.
And people would, I mean, it was like almost sold out every round.
You could get excused from school.
Yeah.
So all week, if you went to the games, you could get excused from school. And they had buses that would take our students up to the games. Our student body section was packed every single game. Every single game was packed because kids didn't want to go to school. They wanted to go home, come watch us play. And it was awesome. We would rent the hotel. Or we'd rent the Red Lion right across the street, which I think they've torn down now. It was right across the street. And we'd stay there all week, and our students would be staying there all week, and it felt like it was like March Madness. Or, I mean, it was awesome. It was like the greatest week. And then we, you know, got getting to go up there as a freshman. I just sat on the bench for a very, that's the year Josh won player of the year. Yeah. And Hillsborough lost to Tigard, I think, in the state championship that game. My sophomore year, I think that was Churchill or A.D. Smith. I don't know. But, man, what a great experience going up to the state tournament, playing 16 teams. So you had four games. You'd have to win four to win it. If you lost, you were in the breakfast bracket.
Breakfast bracket. Yeah. It's a lost thing, man.
Yeah.
And that was like one game of breakfast. Yeah. And then, you know, that's it. But
yeah. I mean, it was an awesome atmosphere. Coach Adams, I remember, really lobbied to keep the 16-team tournament going before they cut it to 8.
Yeah.
And then moved it. But it was, I mean, that was like, that was the thing, dude, for like the 80s, even as a kid, going to the Glass Palace and getting out of school to go watch the state tournament all week long. And that's where you'd see Damon and Jason Franklin and Denmark Reed and, man, just some great players.
My dad started taking us. I think my sophomore year, my dad started taking us. And
yeah.
Went about every year after that. And then
last
year, I started taking my son. My dad would come with us. And so now we're carrying the tradition alive.
Yeah. I think the Child Center is a great.
It's been a great location, I think.
Yeah. That was always the place for the girls. So when I grew up, it was always the boys were at the Memorial Coliseum. Girls were always at the Child Center. And both are awesome places. The Child Center is a great.
The best thing about it right now is my son is 4. So he can run laps on that track.
Oh, yeah.
In halftime and in between games.
That's where you would have found me. All my sister's games up on that track, getting into trouble.
Well, something I hope people hear from your story is you were a Division I point guard, but your freshman and sophomore year, you were not a starting point guard at your high school.
No.
And guess what?
No.
You were still outstanding.
I was never the best player on my high school team.
Because of Thalo.
Yeah, and Thalo. And even my junior year, Jeff Rice, who went over to, he averaged 18 points a game. My senior year, I averaged 13 points a game. One of the greatest compliments I ever got was from John Hildebrand, Super Handles. He came to one of my games as a kid, and he's sitting in the stands, and the guy goes, I want you to watch that point guard. And they were talking about me. And he goes, how many points does he have? And he goes, wait till the end of the game and tell me if it even matters. I think I had 6 points in that game. Like, I had 13 assists, and John was like, you were the funnest person I've ever seen play basketball. And it wasn't about my role. I didn't need to score. And I still was able to keep playing. I got to go. With all these kids, whether it's Division III, Division II, Division I, do you love the game? Then the goal should be to keep playing the game for as long as you possibly can. Or like Jeremiah said, I'm going to play this thing till the wheels fall off. And those ball handling drills allowed me to do that, dude. I was never the best scorer, never the best player on any team I've ever played on. But I got to keep playing the game I loved. And for that, I will always be grateful.
Outstanding. Thanks, Coach.
Man, thanks for having me.
Appreciate it.
You're awesome.